Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our Thursday podcast. This article comes to us from a listener out of Kentucky who said that we need to read it and examine it. And it's a doctor who is the author of this. And it says that she is the president of the American College of Pediatricians, a national organization of pediatricians and other healthcare professionals dedicated to the health and well-being of children. Transgender politics have taken Americans by surprise and caught some lawmakers off guard. Just a few short years ago, not many could have imagined a high-profile showdown over transgender men and women's access to single-sex bathrooms in North Carolina. But transgender ideology is not just infecting our laws, it is intruding into the lives of the most innocent among us children. And with the apparent growing support of the professional medical community. As explained in my 2016 peer-reviewed article, Gender Dysphoria or Phoria, in Children and Suppression of Debate, professionals who dare to question the unscientific party line of supporting gender transition therapy will find themselves maligned and out of a job. The article is dated July 3rd, and it's entitled, I'm a Pediatrician, How Transgender Ideology has infiltrated my field and produced large-scale child abuse. All right, who's next?
I speak as someone intimately familiar with the pediatric and behavioral health communities and their practices. I am the mother of four who served 17 years as a board-certified general pediatrician with a focus in child behavioral health prior to leaving clinical practice in 2012. For the last 12 years, I have been a board member and researcher for the American College of Pediatricians, and for the last 3 years, I have served as its president. I also sat on the board of directors for the Alliance for Therapeutic Choice and Scientific Integrity from 2010 to 2015. This organization of physicians and mental health professionals defends the right of patients to receive psychotherapy for sexual identity conflicts that is in line with their deeply held values based upon science and medical ethics. I have witnessed an upending of the medical consensus on the nature of gender identity. What doctors once treated as a mental illness, the medical community now largely affirms and even promotes as normal. Here's a look at some of the changes. First, the new normal. Pediatric gender clinics are considered elite centers for affirming children who are distressed by their biological sex. This distressful condition, once dubbed gender identity disorder, was renamed gender dysphoria in 2013. In 2014, there were 24 of these gender clinics, clustered chiefly along the East Coast and in California. 1 year later, there were 40 across the nation. With 215 pediatric residency programs now training future pediatricians in a transition-affirming protocol and treating gender dysphoric children accordingly, gender clinics are bound to proliferate further. Last summer, the federal government stated that it would not require Medicare and Medicaid to cover transition-affirming procedures for children or adults because medical experts at the Department of Health and Human Services found the risks were often too high and the benefits too unclear. Undeterred by these findings, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health has pressed ahead, claiming without any evidence that these procedures are safe. Two leading pediatric associations, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Pediatric Endocrine Society, have followed in lockstep, endorsing the transition affirmation approach, even as the latter organization concedes within its own guidelines that the transition-affirming protocol is based on low evidence. They even admit that the only strong evidence regarding this approach is its potential health risk to children. The transition-affirming view holds that children who consistently and persistently insist that they are not the gender associated with their biological sex are innately transgender. The fact that in normal life and psychiatry, anyone who consistently and persistently insists on anything else contrary to physical reality is considered either confused or delusional is conveniently ignored.
What an amazing point.
Yep.
Worthy of just stopping and just, how did we get here? I mean, how many children can remember a child who knew that there was someone, they had a friend? And they just made up a notional friend, and for weeks or months they had this friend. His name was Charlie, and Charlie went with them. And Charlie's sitting right here, Mommy, and everyone knows that Charlie's not there, but and we don't let that go on. But in this case, a child can say, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl. I'm not a boy, I'm a girl. I'm not, okay, you're not a boy.
Well, I think one way we got here is the fact that we look around our physical world and we know that there's a creator, but we deny the creator. So, I mean, that's step number one. Because right there, you've stretched over into in this pseudo-scientific approach, which right. is let's call everything good and everything, you know, good, bad, and bad, good. I mean, we saw that predicted in the scriptures. But that's exactly what you have when you look around and you see order to a world and you say, well, nobody made this, even though I've never seen anything in order in my whole life that was without a creator.
Yep, yep.
So that's step number one.
I agree with you, John.
And so it's just the fallout just continues, the glide path continues because, I mean, I think it would be really crazy to say for certain that there won't be a day when someone looks at their arm and says, you know, that's not my arm. That's not my arm, that it won't be treated normal. Oh, you can be normal and still think that. But right now, it's a syndrome. There are people who have a syndrome where they look at their own body part and they say, that doesn't belong to me, get it off. And these people are treated with, you know, psychotic drugs and treated like they have a problem. Like they're not treated normally. But that's exactly what looking down and seeing your biological sex and going, I'm not that. Same thing.
You're exactly right, John. It is the same thing. And yet when you use those ridiculous analogies like you just used, you're not allowed to push the envelope like that to make the point.
Right, because I mean, who makes the rules? That's the whole issue.
Right.
The whole issue is who makes the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason I can't look down and see my gender and say it's not my gender because I believe that God made me that way. But if you believe, well, you're just what you are in your mind, well, mm-hmm. then it makes sense that, well, if you don't believe that's your arm from the elbow down, it's not you.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The transition-affirming protocol tells parents to treat their children as the gender they desire and to place them on puberty blockers around age 11 or 12 if they are gender dysphoric. If by age 16 the children still insist that they are trapped in the wrong body, they are placed on cross-sex hormones, and biological girls may obtain a double mastectomy. So-called bottom surgeries or genital reassignment surgeries are not recommended before age 18, though some surgeons have recently argued against this restriction. The transition-affirming approach has been embraced by public institutions in media, education, and our legal system, and is now recommended by most national medical organizations. There are exceptions to this movement, however, in addition to the American College of Pediatricians and the Alliance for Therapeutic Choice. These include the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, the Catholic Medical Association, and the LGBT Affirming Youth Gender Professionals.
That's odd. That last group was a little odd. Okay.
The transgender movement has gained legs in the medical community and in our culture by offering a deeply flawed narrative. The scientific research and facts tell a different story. Here are some of those basic facts. Number one, twin studies prove no one is born trapped in the body of the wrong sex. Some brain studies have suggested that some are born with a transgendered brain, but these studies are seriously flawed and prove no such thing. Virtually everything about human beings is influenced by our DNA, but very few traits are hardwired from birth. All human behavior is a composite of varying degrees for nature and nurture. Researchers routinely conduct twin studies to discern which factors, biological or non-biological, contribute more to the expression of a particular trait. The best designed twin studies were those with the greatest number of subjects. Identical twins contain 100% of the same DNA from conception and are exposed to the same prenatal hormones. So if genes and/or prenatal hormones contributed significantly to transgenderism, we should expect both twins to identify as transgender close to 100% of the time. Skin color, for example, is determined by genes alone. Therefore, identical twins have the same skin color 100% of the time. But in the largest study of twin transgender adults published by Dr. Milton Diamond in 2013, only 28% of the identical twins both identified as transgender. 72% of the time they differed. Diamond's study reported 20% identifying as transgender, but his actual data demonstrates a 28% figure, as I note here in footnote 19. That 28% of identical twins both identified as transgender suggests a minimal biological predisposition, which means transgenderism will not manifest itself without outside non-biological factors also impacting the individual during his lifetime. The fact that the identical twins differed 72% of the time is highly significant because it means that at 72% of what contributes to transgenderism is one twin consists of non-shared experiences after birth, that is, factors not rooted in biology. Studies like this one prove that the belief in innate gender identity, the idea that feminized or masculinized brains can be trapped in the wrong body from before birth, is a myth that has no basis in science.
All right, well, we are not going to be able to go through each one of her points in that level of detail, but she certainly makes the case. By the way, I've heard the exact same thing with homosexuality with twins.
Born that way.
Mm-hmm. And that they have studies with twins in the exact same way, and they don't have, the numbers are not the same. And you would expect that if it's supposed to be biological, as it's purported, that it would be consistent among twins, and it's not.
Well, it's the same thing with two identical twins that have an alcoholic father. One's an alcoholic, one's not. It's a response to an outside factor, the alcoholism of the father. And one sees it and perceives, I don't want to be that way, so they're not. And one becomes a victim and succumbs to the same destructive pattern.
Yeah.
So somewhere along the line, these twins that diverge, like they said, had some factor out there, whether it was identification with a influential adult or some type of other experience that took place.
All right, let's get on to number two.
Number two, gender identity is malleable, especially in young children. Even the American Psychological Association's Handbook of Sexuality and Psychology admits that prior to the widespread promotion of transition affirmation, 75 to 95% of prepubertal children who were distressed by their biological sex eventually outgrew that distress. The vast majority came to accept their biological sex by late adolescence after passing naturally through puberty. But with transitions, with transition affirmation now increasing in Western society, the number of children claiming distress over their gender and their persistence over time has dramatically increased. For example, the Gender Identity Development Service in the United Kingdom alone has seen a 2,000% increase in referrals since 2009.
All right, so let's unpack that. So many years ago, Johnny would say, I'm a girl, and Daddy would say, you are not a girl, you're a boy, end of discussion. Now we need to take the boy to a therapist.
Or tell him that he is a girl and it's okay and start him on treatments to become a girl.
Right.
And I think even further than that, many years ago, Johnny wouldn't say, I'm a girl, because Johnny would know better. But that's just not socially accepted. So if Johnny would pick up something that looked girly, then Dad would say, hey, put that down. That's for a girl.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, Josiah just did this the other day. You know, we were there at the house, and he picked up this little princess wand, and Josh looked at him and said, put that down. That's your cousin's. You don't play with girl stuff. You know, and to him it was just a stick. He didn't know. But it is the programming that there are masculine things and that there are feminine things.
Right, but listen to these numbers. I mean, you know, 75 to 90% of pre-pubertal children who were distressed outgrew it. They outgrew it.
Yeah.
It took care of itself.
Yeah, the tomboys that were girls became girls when they started to go through puberty, and they recognized that they were girls, and they became interested in boys.
Mm-hmm. It took care of itself.
It just happened. The problem is, it's in vogue.
The problem is,
you want to be on the right side of history.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so we have these social pressures that I want to be a good parent, and a good parent means I let my kid run wild with every fancy of imagination, whether it's from technology to running and trying to bully the teachers, any authority, making sure that they're completely, have complete 100% affirmation, never their feelings are ever hurt, not even one little bit. And that means that if you say that you're a girl, then God bless it, son, you're a girl. And I'm going to uplift that by going out and buying you the prettiest, frilliest dress I can get off the shelf.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely sickening.
Autonomy you don't deserve is the same thing as the fall of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's we've lost all boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the end-all, be-all, you're the greatest parent in the world if you just let your kid be a kid and just leave them alone with no guidance whatsoever. And the Bible's very clear, a child left to themselves will bring their mother to shame.
Well, Jack, what's distressing to me is the reality that there are all kinds of people right now across the United States that are taking their children to these clinics, and they claim to be Christians.
Oh, yeah.
They claim to be Christians. They think that they're Christians, that they have a biblical worldview, and they're totally uneducated, John, as to what a biblical worldview is.
Yeah, our good friend Andy Webb just sent out a tweet yesterday, I think it was. Did you guys see that one? Where I can't remember, it's Eugene somebody, Patterson, I think it is, like a 87-year-old, I think he was basically in charge of translating the Message. Well, anyway, he's come out now and said that, you know, he's okay with transgenderism, he's okay with homosexuality, and the fact of the matter is, he said the very same thing that you said, but he was serious, in which he said, we got many people whose spirituality is just right there, but they just don't see things, as I do out of the Scripture, when it comes to the issue of sexuality. Well, that's a problem.
Yeah. That is a giant problem.
But he was saying it's overlookable because their spirituality is so good.
Unbelievable. Yeah. All right, what's number three?
Puberty blockers for gender dysphoria have not been proven safe. Puberty blockers have been studied and found safe for the treatment of a medical disorder in children called precocious puberty. However, a groundbreaking paper in the New Atlantis points out that we cannot infer from these studies whether or not these blockers are safe in physiologically normal children with gender dysphoria. The authors note there's some evidence for decreased bone mineralization, giving increased risk of bone fractures as young adults, increased risk of obesity and testicular cancer in boys, unknown impact upon psychological and cognitive development. With regard to the latter, we currently don't have any extensive long-term studies of children placed on blockers. And all the studies conducted on adults from the past decade give cause for concern. And then she quotes a couple other ones there.
Can you imagine giving your son or daughter drugs that are going to impact the puberty development?
That'd be rough.
It's hard to... No wonder why she calls it child abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, at 8 years old, I'm given this pill to start swallowing as a boy, because I play with dolls and I have this affinity for pink, and now I'm permanently stunted in my growth of who I am as a man. By the time I'm 10, I figure out that I'm not who I am, but I've been taking these puberty blockers for 24 months. I'm behind all my peers now. Yeah, I can't imagine a parent doing something like this.
But you know, I was trying to find it. I couldn't find it. It was a friend of mine. He posted just 2 days ago a post, and maybe he took it down. I don't know. But it had a picture of a mom and dad and their child standing between them, and they're both holding a sign that says, "We love our daughter and we accept our daughter," but it's not a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a boy, but he's wearing the pink shirt, the makeup, and everything else. And it went on to say how they were going to start giving hormone blockers to this 10-year-old boy so that he could become a girl when the time and age was right for the proper medical procedures to be allowed to be taken place. And they're out there praising him. And it was, and I think it was on Instagram, so it had like thousands of likes because people were praising them with hundreds of comments about what good parents they were for accepting their child as they are.
And you know what's amazing about that? I mean, there are definitely health risks you can point to. You can definitely say that, because the next point in the article says that those who start those blockers never get off of them. They just continue them on and, you know, just keep taking them. They have to, right? So you're basically saying, okay, this health risk is going to continue for the rest of your life. And so what's amazing is we live in a culture where now you're not allowed to go down and buy a big sugary drink from the supermarket because it's unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of parent would do that to your child to allow them to drink Coke? And I'm not for drinking sweet drinks, but just think of the hypocrisy. I mean, we're going to worry about, you know, the sugary drinks and the impact of obesity while we take these natural order of things called puberty and we're going to turn that on its head.
But they're FDA approved, so it's they're approved.
Yeah, you got to wonder how that happens, too.
Yep. Number four.
There are no cases in the scientific literature of gender dysphoric children discontinuing blockers. You need to read the... goes on underneath it.
Let's see the first paragraph.
Okay. Most if not all, children on puberty blockers go on to take cross-sex hormones, estrogen for biological boys, testosterone for biological girls. The only study to date have followed prepubertal children who were socially affirmed and placed on blockers at a young age, found that 100% of them claimed a transgender identity and chose cross-sex hormones.
So when a parent makes that decision, they're making a permanent decision is what that seems to suggest.
Yeah, and then
if the child ever does reverse themselves and comes off of it, by that time they're going to be sterile.
Right.
That's what that last paragraph
says. Yeah, since taking puberty blockers at age 12 or younger, followed by cross-sex hormones, sterilizes a child.
Sterilizes a child. Do you think that the doctor who's prescribing that stuff says, do you understand that for your daughter you're making a decision that she can never have a child again?
If she ever decides to like men.
Mm-hmm. Or... either.
Yeah. And right. Can you think of the last big group of big political group that sterilized a whole segment of society?
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
the Nazis.
Yep.
And the eugenics program from the Nazis. And so what we're essentially doing, and this is underreported because you ask the common person, they don't know that.
Of course they don't know that.
You know, but what you're basically doing, you know, and it's going to kind of hurt, come back to hurt them because they're kind of sterilizing themselves out of the system. Eventually, but I mean, if you're sterilizing your children by offering this therapy, then you are a child abuser because just think of what the law has held to those people in the 50s and 60s who here in North Carolina sterilized, you know, a lot of folks.
Right, right.
Okay, number five, cross-sex hormones are associated with dangerous health risk. From studies of adults, we know the risk of cross-sex hormones include but are not limited to cardiac disease, high blood pressure, blood clots, strokes, diabetes, and cancers. Number six, neuroscience shows that adolescents lack the adult capacity needed for risk assessment. People under the age of 21 have less capacity to assess risk. There is a serious ethical problem in allowing irreversible life-changing procedures to be performed on minors who are too young themselves to give valid consent.
Like getting a tattoo?
Yeah. That you can take off, laser it off. Number seven, there is no proof that affirmation prevents suicide in children. Advocates of the transition-affirming protocol allege that suicide is the direct and inevitable consequence of withholding social affirmation and biological alterations from a gender-dysphoric child. In other words, those who do not endorse the transition-affirming protocol are essentially condemning gender-dysphoric children to suicide. Yet, as noted earlier, prior to the widespread promotion of transition affirmation, 75 to 90% of the youth ended up happy with their biological sex, after simply passing through puberty. In addition, contrary to the claim of activists, there is no evidence that harassment and discrimination let alone the lack of affirmation or the primary cause of suicide among any minority group. In fact, at least one study from 2008 found perceived discrimination by LGBT-identified individuals not to be causative. Over 90% of people who commit suicide have a diagnosed mental disorder, and there is no evidence that gender dysphoric children who commit suicide are any different. Many gender dysphoric children simply need therapy to get to the root of their depression, which very well may be the same problem triggering the gender dysphoria.
Great.
Number 8. Transition affirming protocol has not solved the problem of transgender suicide. Adults who undergo sex reassignment, even in Sweden, which is among the most LGBT-affirming countries, have a suicide rate nearly 20 times greater than that of the general population. Clearly, sex reassignment is not the solution to gender dysphoria.
Did you hear that number?
Mm-hmm.
20 times. I mean, don't just run past that number. Have suicide rates nearly 20 times greater. By the way, it's the same thing with the LGBT community. It might not be the exact 20, but it's high. It's crazy high. The crux
of the matter is that while the transition affirming movement purports to help children, it is inflicting a grave injustice on them and their non-dysphoric peers. These professionals are using the myth that people are born transgender to justify engaging in massive, uncontrolled, and unconsented experimentation on children who have a psychological condition that would otherwise resolve after puberty in the vast majority of cases. Today's institutions that promote transition affirmation are pushing children to impersonate the opposite sex, sending many of them down the path of puberty blockers, sterilization, the removal of healthy body parts, and untold psychological damage. These harms constitute nothing less than institutionalized child abuse. Sound ethics demands an immediate end to the use of pubertal suppression, cross-sex hormones, and sex reassignment surgeries in children and adolescents, as well as an end to promoting gender ideology via school curricula and legislative policies. It is time for our nation's leaders and the silent majority of health professionals to learn exactly what is happening to our children and unite to take action.
That's good. Very, very good article. I really can't argue with it. Is there someone out there listening that's going to give us some counterpoints that we didn't consider, that we're not thinking about? Is there someone out there that thinks that we're wrong on this issue? We'd love to hear from you. It's amazing what we're battling with in the year 2017. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.